I was just a kid that was always outside. I was fishing every minute that I could during the spring, summer. I hunted coos deer down in Mexico about 4 years ago. That was outstanding. I mean, one of my favorite hunts of all time. I think he killed more deer driving and checking the cow, drinking his coffee, smoking a cigarette, than I did spending all that time freezing my butt off and all that work that I put in. We had a bear cross the road in front of us, and the bear just meanders up the ditch, and in a split second, wheels around, comes flying down the ditch, false charges. I tell you what, it's been a fun journey so far, and it's just getting started. Hey guys, this is Dennis Stokes with Initial Ascent, and you are listening to Living Country in the City.
Y'all ready for your dose of flyover state spirit? Straight from the concrete jungle? Well, put down your latte and pull on your boots. It's time for Living Country in the City.
Hey y'all, welcome to episode 75 of Living Country in the City.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too. No matter where you are, discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
All right, so getting on to today's episode, y'all, I have a good buddy of mine that I met actually out at the Hunt Expo. We got a chance to sit down and talk for a while, really get to know each other, Mr. Dennis Stokes of Initial Ascent. He's a great guy, and we sit down and have a good time talking a little bit about hunting. So hope you all enjoy this episode.
So how are you, man?
I'm good, man. Yeah, just been hard at it lately.
Yeah.
So you're just now back, huh?
Last Monday was my first week back. I got back on, I think, Saturday. Took, you know, Sunday to just kind of unpack the car and relax a little bit and just get back to some modicum of sanity before starting back in the office. And so that, it's been a struggle, to say the least. It's been quite a struggle, so...
You know, and going on a road trip like you did, I mean, you got to see so much country.
Dude, 6,000 miles I put on that rental truck. 6,000 miles in 3 weeks.
That's awesome.
I mean, just stupid. Out of 22 nights, I spent 9 in a bed, like crashing at a friend's place. All the rest were, one of those nights was in a tent. All the rest were in the back of that pickup truck.
Right.
Like that, that was home. Like, you know, you get to a certain point and it's like that becomes the new normal. And yeah. I got back to my apartment. I'm like, what is this crap? You know?
I'm like, yeah. And you had the dogs with you, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. It kind of, it added some limitations on some of the stuff I could do and like what I was like, where I was willing to go hike and stuff like that. But honestly, like, this trip was so, like, hit it and quit it that it really didn't affect me all that much. You know, I was just in one spot, onto the next. It wasn't really meant to be, like, a super deep dive anywhere in particular, so.
Right.
It's fun, man, though. Like, that was just, man. It was nuts.
Oh, I was so jealous, man, following you the whole way. And that was a great idea. When did you come up with that?
About 2 weeks before I left.
That's great.
Oh, it was nuts.
Oh, so what was your favorite?
Glacier, without a doubt. I mean, there's just no comparison to Glacier National Park. And I mean, Crater Lake was incredible, but there's just so much to Glacier. It's enormous, and there's just so much to see and such variety. It's like Crater Lake, I feel like you go to one specific spot. And I mean, there are just tons of amazing, amazing spots, but Glacier, I mean, I've always had a soft spot for Montana anyway, so that didn't hurt at all. But
yeah, Glacier's one of my favorite spots as well. The family and I went over, I think it was 3 years ago or something, spent 3 or 4 days there, and it was fantastic. Did a bunch of hiking, you know, just got to see a lot of stuff, a lot of animals, and it was awesome.
Oh yeah, I was hoping to see some grizzlies on this trip, but
you didn't see any?
Nothing. I saw the rear end of one bear on my drive into Glacier. I don't know. It looked a little small to be a grizzly, so I think it was just a black bear. But, it was like I was going up the trail to where I was going to camp. It was like it was just almost midnight, you know, and I just caught the tail end of a bear going into the brush with my headlights.
Oh.
That was about it, but I'm like, the one bear I see on this trip.
Yeah.
But yeah.
We had a bear cross the road in front of us when we were in Glacier, and the oncoming traffic had stopped, so we're letting the bear go. And sitting there watching it go across the road, we're keeping our distance, and it crosses the road, goes down into the ditch, and the car that was oncoming pulls up beside it. They roll down their window and they yell something.
Jeez.
The bear just meanders up the ditch and in a split second wheels around, comes flying down the ditch, false charges.
Jeez.
And stops probably 8 feet before it got to that car. And these people were scrambling, freaking out, trying to roll windows up and everything. And so it stops, you know, 8 feet from them, and then just turns around, walks right back up the ditch. And these people had to sit there for a couple minutes and just catch their breath. And you can tell they're just scared to death.
Jeez.
And we're laughing in the meantime, but I had never seen anything like that.
They probably never went to a national park again in their life or whatever.
You always hear about these people getting way too close and, you know, not remembering that these are wild animals and that they could tear your head off.
Admittedly, I probably got closer to a moose than I should have, taken some photos while I was up in Glacier, but,
yeah.
I mean, the second that thing turned its head, I was, like, halfway back to my car already, like, and I was probably about 5 feet from my 5 to 8 feet from my door. Like, I was ready to dive back in that thing. Like, I prepped myself for if this moose decided it did not like me taking its photo. I'm like, I don't know. I refuse to be one of those stories. So.
Oh yeah. Well, and you hear them all the time. You know, the people taking, like in Yellowstone, they taking pictures of the bison and getting way, way too close.
Oh, it's insane. I told this story. I think I told it on the last podcast I released. We saw this Asian tourist family come up like when I was just little. Saw them with their freaking toddler on a bison. Like, I was
crazy.
Like, I didn't understand how crazy that was back then. Now I'm like, holy crap. It just blows me away.
Well, it's amazing that it actually stood there, you know, and let them do that, and they're just smiling, probably, you know.
Yeah.
Of course it was before cell phones and selfies. And
yeah, it was like, you know, it was like full on, you know, like, okay, everyone get around the bison and take the photo. And
yeah,
I mean,
we've all seen those people.
Jeez. Man, I like this was my first time, as far as I remember, this was my first time back to Yellowstone since then.
Oh, wow.
Through there, yeah. But that was cool. Finally got to see my first elk on this trip.
Awesome.
Coming down out of Glacier West. And then I saw some a lot closer down in Yellowstone, and it was incredible.
What did you think? I mean, when you saw it, was it larger than what you had imagined?
It was about what I expected.
Yeah.
I think, you know, it didn't really, and also, you know, it's different because it wasn't like I was in the forest and had it like coming out of the woods towards me. Mm-hmm. There's still that separation. Even if I get out of my car, you know, and I'm leaning up against the fence line, or, you know, leaning up against my horse, I'm like, there's still kind of a distance and separation versus your kind of active participation when you're in the woods, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, all I saw were cows. I didn't see any bulls.
Uh huh.
And so, you know, seeing a bugling bull is going to be just a completely unique experience, I'm sure. So
yeah, you're gonna get to see it this fall, man. If not before.
Oh yeah, I don't know. I've got some good opportunities coming up. I was gonna hit Idaho again, but I just had a really good opportunity. You probably saw the llama picture I posted.
Yeah,
the picture of all the llamas. Those guys were want me to come out and hunt with them. They've got a really solid spot. That's an over-the-counter unit, but it's kind of a little hidden honey hole. And right. They want me to come out and hunt with them. I'm like, wait, so you guys already got the spot, and you got pack llamas, so I don't have to do any work, pretty much? And they're like, kind of like, yeah, I guess. I'm like, all right.
That's fantastic, man.
I'm like, that's the way to do it. And then I got Brandon Waddell. I mean, you guys know him. And
yep.
You know Muley Matt Howell?
I had never met him, but yeah, I know of him.
He's good buddies with Brandon too, and you know, I was hanging out with them in Durango, and they're like, oh, fine, you know, you don't want to come hunting with us. I'm like, you guys never invited me. Don't give me that crap. And so they're like, well, here's your official invitation. I'm like, I'm not going to just like be like, hey, guys, I'm going to come down to Durango to hunt with you. Like, just invite myself.
Right.
I don't know what y'all are doing. And so, you know, I was talking with them, and I'm like, well, that actually works out perfect, because if I end up getting a license and tag for this unit, I'll go hunt with these guys. If I'm successful, awesome. Brandon, you know, has his full setup. He's like, bring down your quarters. We'll process everything. You know, you can wrap it there. Like, you can get the whole thing on video. So there's that. If I'm not successful, I can come down and hunt with them for a while and, you know, see what that turns up. So it gives me two solid opportunities with, you know, different locations with awesome guys to go hunt.
Yeah.
So, you know, see how that works out. I gotta figure that out, though. I gotta look at the units and see where they're at to see. I don't know if Colorado's at all like Idaho, where you get a pretty decent swath when you buy like an over-the-counter tag. You get like a few units.
You know, I'm not sure. I've hunted Colorado once, and that was a couple years back, and it was actually it was a landowner type deal. Basically, it was just landowner access. We could get access to a bunch of public ground through this landowner. We actually stayed on his place. And so, and with that, I bought an elk tag. It was just over the counter.
Yeah.
But it was just for that one unit. So I don't know if they're spread out across, and it wasn't archery either. So I don't know.
I'll have to take a look. I just, you know, it's like, I'm pretty much waiting on kind of the California draw. I think that's my last elk tag I got in the hat, which, I mean, I'm not even sure why I'm waiting. I put in for Thule elk. It's just, you know, the likelihood is stupid, but
you got to put in.
Yeah, I mean, can't get drawn if you don't put your name in the hat. So
that's right. That's right. Now, Arizona, did you put in for anything there today or before?
I put in for elk and oddad, and then I think I just put in for elk and oddad because I have that over the counter archery tag. The late season archery tag that's good, like December, January, and August.
Deer tag?
Yeah. So any legal deer. And so I do that. So I'm like, there's other places I'd rather go hunt muleys. Like if I'm gonna put in, and so you know, and they're just not really my thing anyway. Like I enjoy, you know, like I said, I'll chase anything, but I'm focusing on elk. But I did draw the Audad in New Mexico.
Oh, great.
I don't know what I was thinking. I didn't put in for Audad in Arizona. Antelope. That I was like, I put in for something else. What was it? I put in for antelope and elk in Arizona.
Okay. And,
I mean, I just put in for units that I pretty much knew I'd be getting points for. But
right.
I've got some buddies out there that have a decent amount of points. And they were talking about, I've got 2 points. They were talking about like, hey, you should do a group application with us. We're going to put in for like some cow tags, and just go have a good cow hunt and fill the freezer and then not have to stress about the season. But they were talking about that for not this year, but next year.
Sure.
So I might end up, depending on what next year's looking like, that'd be a... just a fun, like, kickback, no-stress hunt. You know, they've got enough points for it to get a cow tag and a really solid unit.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'll see. And for me, it's like, okay, whatever. You know, I put in, you know, I got a full freezer for 2 points. You know, not a bad.
Yeah.
It's not exactly difficult to build those back up, so.
Yeah. Oh, you bet. What's the story on the coos deer over the counter archery?
So it's that same tag.
That's the same tag?
Yeah, it's mule deer or coos deer. It's just okay. Arizona, even with the draw, so even if you were to like draw a tag, you can still only take one deer a year in Arizona from if I remember correctly. So like if you're doing that over the counter archery and you take a deer in January, but then you draw a tag, you can't use that tag.
I see.
I think that's how it works. I'm 90% sure. But yeah, so, you know, that year you just put in for a point or whatever. But, and I don't know if that's a non-resident thing or if the same applies to residents. I think the same applies to residents too. But yeah, so that's coos deer or mule deer.
Yeah, I'm thinking hard about going down there December or January. Ever since, you know, I hunted coos deer down in Mexico about 4 years ago. That was outstanding. I mean, one of my favorite hunts of all time. And then I listened to, I think it was your podcast with Jay Scott.
Yeah.
And you guys talking about that particular tag in Arizona. So that's something I'm definitely going to do.
It's, I mean, if you're putting in, you know, you guys are Southern Utah, right?
No, we're actually in Idaho.
Why did I think you were in Utah? I don't know. I know who I'm thinking. I'm getting mixed up. I was confusing a conversation we had with a conversation I had with the Scree guys. Idaho is a bit more of a trek. Like it's nice for me because that's, you know, it's like a 4 to 5 hour drive for me to get into Arizona. You know, it's if I want to get into like coos country, it's more like a 6 to 8 hour drive. But, you know, I mean, I can hop in, not that, you know, stay on this side of Phoenix. It's 5 hours for me to get into some decent country for hunting. And that's the nice thing about those tags, too, is it's one tag. I mean, it's valid, like, I swear, like 75%, 80% of the state. Like, some of the best units out there, and you get to hunt them over the counter.
Wow. So, and... You're hunting in January.
Yeah, it's rut hunt, or if you're a velvet guy, you can go chase. I mean, you know, if you're willing to brave Arizona in August, you know, you get to chase him in velvet too.
Oh, sure.
My buddies are like, we don't hunt in the middle of the day. They're like, we have a lot of air conditioning and beer that we go visit, and then we hunt in the mornings and evenings.
You go. Yeah.
He's like, he sent me a picture of he's grilling just this big old, I think it was a tri-tip or something, or I can't even remember. He's like, by the way, we're also going to be eating very good when you come by in August. I'm like, all right, I'm down.
There you go.
But yeah,
and the deer, they're going to be out, you know, early in the morning, and probably by 9 o'clock, they're going to be bedded down in the shade somewhere, huh?
Oh yeah, I don't imagine they, you know, who knows? I don't know enough to really tell one way or the other, but I wouldn't imagine that they would be moving around in whatever 110 degree heat. Something tells me they'll be super active. I wonder if that's like a, I wonder if that's almost a benefit to some extent, to where they'll be just even more active. If you go at a time where it's like super hot, but it's dark of the moon, so mm-hmm. there's just a super limited time when they're moving. I almost wonder if that kind of gives you an advantage. It just narrows down when they're going to be active, and they're going to be like super active because they got to get all their stuff done.
Yeah, I would imagine so. You know, I grew up in the South, and you know, unless it was in the rut, nothing was out, you know, past 9 o'clock. I mean, it just got too hot and humid, even during hunt season.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine. Like, I went sat in a tree stand in Mississippi over Thanksgiving for a while.
Oh, bless your heart.
Oh man, but
that's what they say now.
Yeah, well, bless your heart. And you know, I mean, geez, it got, it honestly didn't get, I mean, it got down probably, I think the mid 20s, but, I mean, it was pretty frosty.
That's chilly down there.
Yeah. Did it? No, maybe it was mid 30s. I don't know. But I just remember sitting in that metal tree stand. I'm like, this thing just sucks the life out of you in the cold. All the joy and warmth from your body is pulled right from your butt cheeks. Like
that's right.
And then, but I could not imagine trying to sit out there in like just the humid southern, like
it's mosquitoes
challenge. And oh gosh,
yeah,
no, thank
it's
you.
A challenge. It's a whole different way of hunting, and you know, and technology. You know how far technology's come. You know, in mountain hunting.
Yeah.
It's the same way down there. Technology's come so far in tree stand hunting. I mean, they wear some clothes. they're wrapping up in big, you know, body bag type things.
Yeah, I've seen those. They're like almost like giant, like sleeping bag snuggy things, like the body suits.
Right. I'd probably fall asleep.
Oh, geez. It's, you know, I've talked about this before with some folks. Like, it is a skill to sit in a tree stand. Like, you know, say what you will about, you know, some people I know talk a lot of crap about, like, whatever, sitting over a food plot or a feeder or whatever it is. But, like, it takes a skill to sit in a tree stand like that, not move, but stay focused the entire time.
Yeah, it's a mental challenge. It really is. You know, hunting, you know, out west, obviously that has, you know, it's mental challenges as well as physical challenges, but there's a big mental challenge sitting in a tree stand for, you know, well, if you hunt during the rut, you could be there. I mean, you're going to be there all day.
Oh, totally. I remember sitting, we would do mostly mornings and evenings. I don't know when they rut. Do they rut like later, like the, like down in Arizona or?
Yeah. So, you know, typically January, I mean, where I grew up in Northwest Florida, they were typically late December, January when they were in the rut.
And, okay.
Yeah. And you know, you could sit all day, sun up, sundown.
So this was probably a little bit pre-rut then, I suppose. This would have been, y'all, you know, it would have been Thanksgiving when I was up there. So, They were definitely chasing them, and there was a lot of scrapes and all that stuff. So
yeah,
I saw a really good buck. I only saw one buck the entire time I was there, but this was been shooting for a year at that point, and I didn't have a rangefinder even, and you know, so I was estimating range, and it was probably about 50 yards away, 50, 60 yards away, and that was just well beyond a range I was comfortable shooting at the time,
right.
And He just stopped for a second, and I just remember thinking to myself, I'm like, oh man, if I'm coming back here every morning until he comes back.
Right.
And he never did. Never saw him. And I saw maybe 6 or 7 other does during that time, and just there's nothing to even draw back on. I think I actually drew back maybe once that entire trip, but that was my first experience with hunting. Like,
really?
Yeah. Was all of that was tree stand time in Mississippi. Mm. But yeah.
Too bad they didn't have a bunch of doe tags, you know, that they needed filled.
Well, no, they were looking to get does. I saw a bunch
of
them. None of them, they were either crashing through, like something had spooked them way off and they were just like tearing through, or they were just too far off and weren't heading that direction. That's the frustrating. More than anything else, I feel like that's the biggest frustration with tree stand hunting is you're just like, you're sitting there, you're like, well, can't do anything about that one.
Right.
Bye.
Yep.
Just watch that giant buck, you know, 100 yards, 120 yards off with no desire to head whatsoever your direction.
Yep. And there you are.
That's just got to be the most aggravating thing. Like, I know how much it bugged the crap out of me just when I saw does that were too far off and had no interest in coming over. But I couldn't imagine just seeing some giant buck that just has no idea you're there, but it just has zero interest in coming anywhere near you.
Right. Well, yeah, that's why, you know, tree stand placement is so important. You know, growing up, that's mostly what I did was whitetail hunt. And I remember just how much time I spent on tree stand placement, you know, prevailing winds and, you know, how far off of the trail, you know, to get. And that was back before trail cams and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to date myself now. but yeah, that was back before trail cams, we couldn't afford trail cams. So, it was just, you know, you try to figure it out. And, so it was quite the challenge. And we'd have multiple stands, you know, up all over the place, you know, or I would, I remember I went a couple years where I was just taking a climber in, you know, and setting a climber up. That was interesting. But a lot of hunting before school, a lot of hunting after school type thing.
Oh, yeah. So I'm pretty much going to put all of this in the podcast because it's just too good.
Great.
I'm pretty much just going to say, you know, we already started this podcast.
that's fine, man.
So there we go. It'll be a bit of a unique start. But yeah, since we're getting into it, I mean, you've heard a few of the episodes, you know, so you know I always like to start just you know, a little background on yourself, you know, where you grew up, how you got started in the outdoors and hunting, all of this.
Yeah, so I grew up in Northwest Florida. I'm originally from Central Florida, and grew up on a small beef cattle farm, I guess. We always had a few cows. That's how a beef cow farm is described back there. But yeah, I grew up rabbit hunting. My grandma's grove, she had orange groves, and I grew up rabbit hunting and hog hunting with my dad. We had dogs and lots of nights hunting hogs, trapping hogs. I did a lot of trapping when I was young as well. You know, I read the book and watched the movie Where the Red Fern Grows.
Oh yeah.
And that was, you know, and I had couple of coon hounds, Dan and Ann, of course.
Of course.
Yeah. And but just,
see, I wonder, you know, how many people listening to this will actually understand the reference, though.
I don't know. It'll be interesting. But yeah, I was just a kid that was always outside. And fishing, we always had farm ponds around, and I was fishing every minute that I could during the spring, summer, and then in the fall, I was doing a lot of hunting, just going out by myself, and from a very young age too. I grabbed my little Honda 125, and I would plow through to, you know, to my stands and whatnot, and so did a lot of whitetail hunting. However, I wasn't real successful. I always saw a lot of deer, but I was really picky. And I had one friend that it seemed like, and they had a huge, huge, massive land that he hunted, and his dad, they had huge whitetail bucks hanging everywhere on their wall, and it seemed like he was always killing, you know, bucks. Like, and back there, where we live, huge whitetail populations, but not quality. And so I remember Thanksgiving, so the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday of Thanksgiving weekend, that was when our deer season started. And you could kill a buck a day, and we didn't have tags, we just had licenses. Mm-hmm. And then it would shut off after that until about December 10th. And I want to say somewhere around December 10th and 11th, there was the, what they called doe weekend. And so you could, during doe weekend, it was a Saturday and Sunday, you could kill one buck and two does each day of that weekend. And then after that, the season would go to about January 31st. So basically all the way through the rut. So you could have tons and tons of meat in your freezer. And I worked so hard as a kid. And my dad, the old rancher, you know, I think he killed more deer driving and checking the cows, drinking his coffee, smoking his cigarette in the pickup truck than I did spending all that time freezing my butt off and all that work that I put in. I'll never forget one morning, it was really cold. Now, Florida standards, you know, it was like 25 degrees. It was really, really cold. And I had spent probably 6 hours in a tree stand that morning. And I come home, and my dad, he's sitting out there on the porch, 25 degrees, drinking his coffee. And this is not standard for him because he is usually, you know, pretty cold natured. He just kind of points over there to the back of the pickup truck. And there's a buck, you know, laying in the back of the pickup truck. And he's just grinning from ear to ear. And I'm pretty frustrated because I had spent 6 hours. And this is before... This is before all the clothes came along, you know. I mean, I'm old school, still got my Walmarts on. And so I said, well, tell me about it, you know, how'd it happen? He said, well, son, he said, I was down checking the cows, and the little buck just was standing out there. And he said, so I put down my coffee, and I rolled down my window. I got my rifle out the window, and I just popped him, and I rolled my window back up, started drinking my coffee again, went on checking my cows. And he said, half hour later, I came back, loaded the buck in my truck, and I came home.
Jeez.
So that was one of several times that this happened. So So moving on, I went to college and actually came out here to Idaho in 2000 and hunted for a couple years, got indoctrinated into Western hunting, and wow, I was not prepared for that. It was an eye-opening experience, to say the least. And then my wife actually got pregnant with twins. A couple years after we moved out here, and I set aside hunting for probably 7 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was tough, but just had to. I had to concentrate on my career and spending time, you know, helping my wife. We're out here in Idaho without any family, and so it was just she and I, and so it was all hands on deck. Her hands in my hands.
Disappearing for 10, 15 days at a time, just
It didn't work, man. So, yeah, when the kids were about 7 or 8, we were watching a show. I think it was Ted Nugent, actually. And
Uncle Ted.
Yeah, and my kids just really got into watching it, and my son wanted to kind of be like him. He wanted to pick up a bow. And so I said, all right, you know, that could be cool. And so then I wasn't back into hunting yet.
So had you bow hunted prior to this, or was it just strictly rifle?
Yeah, I bow hunted when I was in high school.
Okay.
Yeah. And okay. Yeah. And some in college as well. So and back there, you know, we didn't have any I rifle hunted with a 30-30 Winchester.
Yeah.
We didn't it was all close range type stuff. So but yeah, basically my kids got me back into hunting. And we went to the expo in Salt Lake, and my son wanted to go there to meet Ted Nugent. And so we did. We took off on a Saturday and went to Salt Lake and got to meet Uncle Ted. And well, it's, you know, and I got back into it. And
so how long ago was this again?
Oh gosh. I think my son was 8 or 9, when that happened. So, and he's going on 16 now. So not too awful long ago.
Well, I mean, just this last bit, you've still been hunting longer than I have my entire life. So, yeah.
But you know, it just, it's one of those things that, you know, once a hunter, always a hunter, you can pick it right back up. But you know, it was just a time in my life where I had to do it. I really didn't have a choice, and just kind of chose to spend the time raising kids and, you know, working on a career and all that stuff. And
you got to focus on the family when you need to.
Yeah, absolutely. But now I'm back, and I won't ever leave. So.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
So we met in a kind of a funny way, I guess. I guess you had, I can't remember. I think you guys may have started following me or something. And you're really active on my profile, I remember. And I remember looking at the logo and thinking to myself, I'm like, huh, that's kind of a cool logo. Like, I just remember kind of like, I like that. I'll check out this, this profile. And, I just remember, I think you guys, I can't remember if I'd gone to your profile before, but you guys were announcing this last time I did, you know, you were announcing the launch of the new pack. And so I guess we haven't even really touched on that. If you want to really quick, I guess, before I continue on with the story, maybe talk a little bit about that and the company.
So we've got a brand new company called Initial Ascent, and we are building backpacks for the backcountry hunter.
And who is we?
That would be me and my partner Joe, and we set out on the adventure about 3.5 years ago, actually, and just now February 8th of 2018, that's when we launched finally. So lots of research, development, design. And testing, lots and lots and lots of testing.
I mean, that's just got to be terrible, isn't it? Having to go out and test new packs and go into the backcountry. I mean,
it's awful.
It's just a miserable life, you know.
It really is. Yeah, it's you know, and you ask the wife, you know, say, hey, you know, I gotta get out there again. You know, we've got some more testing to do, and she's like, oh yeah, you got to, you've got to, you know, you've got to make sure this is right. I'm like, right on, you know, just what I was thinking. So yeah, the testing is just awful.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, we've been at it now since February, as far as you know, on the open market, and you know, basically what we're trying to do. It's definitely a very competitive market. You know, with backpacks have come so far technically in the last, I'd say, you know, 10 years, but especially in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And so it's a very tough market, some great competition out there. And we feel like our presence is it raises the bar. And I think it makes everybody better for the backcountry hunter. And so.
What's the saying? A rising tide lifts all ships, something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, but I tell you what, it's been a fun journey so far, and mm-hmm. It's just getting started.
Well, yeah. So, you know, I saw y'all were launching the packy at Hunt Expo, and
right.
This year Hunt Expo is taking place over my birthday on the 8th, and saw y'all were launching on the 8th, and of course, I, being the smart I am, I couldn't resist making a comment. Like, well, hey, is your birthday gift? Ha 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 ha. You know, jeez.
We're just happy you reached out to us.
There you go. Yeah, but you're like, well, stop by the booth, you know. And
yeah.
So I made sure to head on over. I think I came by first day to say hello.
Yeah. It was that morning. Yeah.
Yeah, y'all were kind of getting all set up and over back by the Sitka booth back there, and I think, man, I sat down. We talked for a good 45 minutes, an hour, just about almost nothing hunting related, but just about life and God and a bunch of great stuff. And then we got around to talking about the packs for a bit, and
right,
I remember
trying, and then we got slammed.
Oh geez, man, I remember. So I tried one on, and you know, I have a pile of different packs, and I've got an Exo, I've got a couple of Kafaru packs, and you know, I love them all, and they all have their own places, but I, you know, a pack is a very personal fit at times, and it's different for everyone. I remember putting on y'all's pack, and I was like, holy crap, this thing just fit me like a glove, you know, it worked really well. And, you know, you guys kind of got adjusted for me, and we're talking, and I'm like, man, this is great. I just wish you all had loaded them down so I could feel what it was like with weight. And you look at me, and I can't remember how much you said. It was like, I think you guys said that you had like 40 or 50 pounds in it or something.
Yeah, I think we had 50.
Yeah. And you're like, dude, there's 50 pounds in there. I'm like, you have to be crapping me right now. There's no way. Yeah, you know, it just sat well, and pretty much the rest of the Hunt Expo, I'd come by maybe once or twice, just I'd be over at Sitka, whatever, and I'd stick my head in, and you guys were just running. Like, it was like somebody kicked over an anthill.
Yeah, man. It was amazing. It really was.
So I was really happy to see all that, and, you know, the pack system is really pretty neat. I actually, you know, it's the 12th of June, and, you know, I just went on a hike this morning. I'm sure y'all saw it. Oh yeah, you hopped on the live.
Yep.
Finally got a chance. I mean, I've had this thing for what, 2 months now.
Yeah.
I went and finally was able to pick one up. You know, I looked at the finances, and like I said, I've got a few packs, so I was kind of like, do I really need one? I was kind of looking at the finances, and I looked at the size, and it's in a good spot in between the two packs I already have. So my Exo is a lot smaller, my Kafaru pack's a whole lot bigger, and so I was kind of looking, I'm like, well, it fills a good hole. I really like you guys and really wanted to support what you guys are doing too, and I'm like, all right, I'll look at the finances, okay, you know, and we talked, and I'm like, okay, I can do this, and picked one up, and it came in the mail, and I'm like, awesome, I'm not going to open it yet, because I like want to get the apartment clean and like get some good photos and put it on and post some stuff up. And then all of a sudden, I get work, like, gets me slammed. And then I have to go out to the desert. So I'm like, I'm bringing this thing out to the desert with me because I'll have some time out there. I'll get some good shots. Wasn't even able to get it out of the box in the desert. I finally, right before this road trip, I'm able to get it out of the box. And then because I have the dogs, I barely do any hiking on the road trip. So I got to use it a little bit, actually, when I was out visiting Brandon and Matt in Durango.
Oh, cool.
So we did a little bit of hiking and got to try out the packs. But of course, that's when my camera's broken.
Oh, wow.
So I'm like, I swear I'm going to take some pictures for you guys and post them.
No,
that's
all right.
But was finally able to actually, like, load it for bear and throw it on and get up. And I'm really enjoying the pack. So
cool.
Enjoying the system. You know, it's a cool system. It's unique. You know, I want to do, I've actually had a couple people request that I do just a walkthrough of the pack.
Sure.
A couple
yeah.
of my followers. So I need to hop on that and pull it apart and put it back together. It's just, I really like the concept, how it's super modular and it's just designed with a quick, just put it together and take it apart. Load your meat, strap it, you know, pack everything up, strap it over the top. It's designed with the least amount of effort for you in mind, which I really like. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and one of the things that we did, just to touch on it, you know, by putting those orange bar tacks, you know, and the user just matches them up. So really there's no guessing with what buckle goes where and all that. So that was one of the things that we've, you know, really are proud of that and just how it works, you know, functionally. So,
I'm definitely kind of, it's one of those weird things though. It's like you get the new pack and it's, you know, it's different than what you've got before, and
right.
So you've kind of got to rethink your whole organization scheme mm-hmm. with stuff. Yep. Where it's like, okay, I don't have these types of pockets, but I do have these ones, but they're in a different spot. This one's more accessible. This one's less accessible. So I've got to think about, okay, I can rearrange this, and okay, this one's this size when my front pocket was this size before, and like, it's weird. It's like it's such a. It's so much more difficult than you think about after you've been doing the exact same thing for a full year.
Right.
You know, it's just, it's a trip. I'm still trying to figure out exactly, okay, like on the side pockets. I'm like, because they're, you've got like the full length one and then there's right. like the half length one, but then it's like a double pocket. And so I'm like, okay, I got to figure this out. Which one, where does the bugle tube go? Where does the tripod, where's the walking sticks? So it's definitely that's where I'm at in the experiment right now.
Yeah.
Figuring
out
that's
good great.
Stuff out. And it's good. It also, I think, makes you reevaluate everything you're taking out into the backcountry. Like, especially idiots who take like giant 80 pound packs. I don't know who would do that, but,
on their first elk hunt by themselves.
I don't know.
That's okay.
I don't know who would do
that's
that.
Okay. You know what? You are learning a lot, man. And like the last podcast you had, you know, some great advice on there for sure for you and for all guys, you know, that are just getting started. So that was a good one.
It's this last one is decimating all other podcasts that I've put out. Like it is destroying it. And I've been getting like message after message and text message being like, holy crap, I just about crapped my pants listening to this one. I was laughing so hard and da da da. I mean I
almost ran off the road a couple of times.
Jeez, it got to the point where I'm like, I guess I just gotta roll with this one.
Right.
Oh, it is what it is. It was a fun one, man. We had a good time. I was dying. I remember Aaron afterwards, he looks at me, he's like, well, that would have been a good one for our audience. I don't know what the hell your audience is going to do, but we'll find out.
Oh, funny.
You know, I mean, and I would say a lot of it was just us BSing around, but there was some good stuff in there for sure, and just especially towards the end, you know, like
Like he said, he had to Donnie Vince in it a little bit, but You know, I kind of put all my mistakes and my stories out there, not to discourage people from just going out and doing stuff, but just the opposite. But to encourage them to be like, go out and just get after it. You know, okay. You know, if you can't find anyone to go with you, or if just no one's available, like, because for me, I ended up kind of starting super late figuring this stuff out. So everyone already had their, you know, their hunts planned. And, you know, I probably could have found some people to go deer hunting with or something local, but I'm like, I wanted to go chase elk and I'm going to do this one way or the other. And, and, you know, I put that stuff out there in hopes that, okay, yeah, somebody will do that and they'll have the confidence because they heard the mistakes I made. They're like, okay, well, I don't feel like I'm going at this totally blind. Yeah, you know, they'll go out and they'll make their own mistakes. And, you know, I'm going to, everyone makes mistakes. I don't care, you know, if you're Jim Shockey, Cam Haynes, whoever, you're going to go out in the backcountry, you're going to make a mistake one way or the other. You know, some are bigger, some are smaller, some result in you tearing the meniscus in both of your knees. Others maybe just result in you missing a shot on an animal, but... different levels, obviously, and you know those mistakes get smaller and fewer and more far between. I just want people to. I get excited when I get those messages that are like, you know, I've been listening to your podcast and I'm super excited because I'm going after it for my first time this year. You know, it's like, you know, maybe you've been whitetail hunting your whole life and you've always wanted to hunt elk, but it's like it's just this whole new world, like getting out there for 10 days after it. And,
right.
You know, if I can do that, I'm stoked on it, you know?
Yeah. And you know, it's like you did, and we all still do. I mean, we try to gather in this information age, we try to gather as much information as we can about whatever given subject we're after or whatever goal we're trying to accomplish. So I could see somebody that wants to go after elk, you know, then so they hear your story and then they flip through your podcast and then they listen to Corey Jacobson and then they listen to Jim Shockey and they listen to, you know, all these different ones and they learn different things. If they want to learn how to call elk, they listen to Corey and Jason and you. That was awesome. I thought for a beginner, you know, wow, how much better can it get than that? I think I reposted that one. That was just, that really, just putting myself in a beginner's shoes, that was really awesome. And you don't hear that out there.
I mean, I've said it a million times before. You know, we're dudes. We like to feel like we know what we're doing. You know, we're in charge. We got this handled. And so a lot of the time it's tough for us to ask questions. And I mean... I know I'm going to make an idiot of myself out there, so I might as well step it up a notch and play the fool when I need to and be the one to ask those questions so somebody else doesn't have to, you know?
There are no stupid questions, right?
Yeah, I mean...
The only stupid ones are the ones that don't get asked.
But it's like, you know, it's some guy may go out and just never ask that question because he's... too prideful or too embarrassed or whatever it is. And it could be something that could be make a huge difference in his hunt, in his trip and, you know, keeping him safe, whatever that is. And so, you know what, if I sound a little bit dumb, cause I ask, you know, which direction a diaphragm call goes in or, you know, does the rubber side go up or down, you know?
Right.
And some dude like that helps him learn to call. Then I'm more than stoked to take the brunt of looking like an idiot, yeah. You know, whatever yeah. It is. It's fun, man. So what do you got on the plate this year?
Oh man, we've got, you know, I last year I was fortunate enough to draw a pretty good bull tag here in Idaho. And, you know, with work and everything, I'm not venturing out of state a ton. I did go to Wyoming last year and killed a nice antelope buck. I actually killed my first bull with my bow this last year.
I was just looking at that picture.
Man, that was so awesome. So, so I plan on going back and doing that again. It'll be a over-the-counter tag because I can't draw again in Idaho this year. Got to wait a year after you draw. So,
that's the thing, like, for draw units in Idaho, or?
Yeah, so if you draw in Idaho, a bull tag, for instance, then you have to wait a year. You can't put in for a draw tag next year. So
is that just rifle or rifle and archery? Just yes, any?
It's any
draw unit.
Right. That's the way I understand it. So now, you know, I'll be doing over the counter, just the general archery tag.
So, I mean, there's so much opportunity in Idaho for over the counter. It's just stupid. It really is.
Yeah. You just got to do homework and get out there and, you know, get it done. But
I mean, so many of those units too, it's like when I got my over the counter tag, I thought I was just buying for the single unit, but you know, I bought for 29, but it gave me like 30 and or like 28 and 51 as well, and so it's like tripled the size of my, you know, my area and all of this stuff, right. And it was just, it's so easy to, I mean, comparatively, I feel like for someone just getting out, it's so easy to find like opportunities in Idaho. Like, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah. You just have to put the time in. That's it. You know, you can find opportunities. You just have to put the time in. And so, I'll do early season mule deer, at the end of August, and I'll probably do a general season. I've got a cousin coming out in October again. He's from Florida, and he actually we went this last year, and he harvested his first mule deer in Idaho, so that was really cool. So he's going to come out, and we're going to do that again. So and then I'll hunt with my son a little bit as well, as soon as football season's over with. So
what's he like? What's he like to chase?
He loves deer. He hasn't gotten an opportunity with elk yet, but yeah, he loves deer, loves antelope, and he's got a really good eye on him. He doesn't have a ton of experience yet, but I mean, we've been out a lot together, and he's got a really good eye. He likes to spot animals before I do, so.
Nice. So what's the next, what should we be looking out for with Initial Ascent as well?
So here at the end of the month, they're having what's called the Great Northwest Outdoor Expo, and that's coming to Nampa here, just right down the road. It's going to be at the Idaho Center, the 29th through the 1st. And, it's the first annual here, but apparently this is something that has happened a lot in the South and the Midwest. It's actually put on by Ducks Unlimited.
Okay.
So it's going to be a really, really big expo that I think it's set for companies to showcase their gear for the upcoming hunting season. So, and it'll be from... They'll have dog training. They'll have dog competitions. They're going to have an elk calling contest. Corey Jacobson's going to be there. Jules McQueen is coming in to be a judge, and she's actually going to do a couple seminars. And so there'll be a lot of folks there, it sounds like. We're going to be there. And so that's kind of our last big expo before hunting season. And we're going to have... some new products we're going to be testing the scouting season, as far as summer scouting season, and then of course this fall to release, early 2019.
There we go. I know we talked a little bit about this at the expo. Any eye on some patterns coming out? Should we?
Yeah, we've got an eye on a couple of patterns actually, and. Yeah, we just it's coming together, we'll say. So, yeah, we're probably going to venture into the camo world a little bit.
Nice. Well, I always like, I mean, you know, you listen to the podcast, so you know how I always like to end, and like to finish it up. You know, somebody comes up to you and says, you know, hey, I really want to get into hunting, and, you know, maybe there's someone from the city, they just don't have access, or they haven't been raised in it, or maybe they're just any new hunter, and, like, you know, I'm feeling intimidated by this whole thing. You know, what advice, what words of wisdom would you have to give to this new hunter?
You know, what I'm going to tell them is, hey, you know, you need to come with me. I'm gonna introduce you to it. But I'm probably going to start them small, or and maybe not even start small, but just I'm going to start where the success rate could possibly be very high.
What, I want not an over-the-counter archery elk hunt?
Probably won't start them there. that will be on down the line, but probably won't start them there. You know, something that's just, you know, really easy, where they're going to see a lot of animals, something that is just going to get them hooked. That's probably how I'm going to start them.
Hog, and, antelope. You know,
you know, mule deer, general season mule deer is really good. I probably wouldn't start them out with, you know, with a bow unless they have an interest in bow hunting, and then, hey, you know, we can take them that route. But something where they're going to have a lot of opportunities to see a lot of animals, and you know, and to possibly harvest one. But I'm definitely going to tell them from the get go, you know, be ready to fail, you know, be prepared to fail, but don't give up. Use each opportunity to learn. I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they were talking about a similar thing, and they were talking about mental toughness, and basically when you on a hunt, when you get to, or in life, when you get to a situation to where you have two choices to make, take the harder one, because that's always going to be the more rewarding. And so if you've got a situation where, I don't know, you can go this way or that way, and let's say, you know, this is going downhill, but your opportunity for seeing animals may not be as great, but it's not going to be as hard as, you know, hiking up to the top of the ridge so you can see a little better. And your opportunity for seeing a deer or whatever is going to be greater up there. Go ahead and take that hard one. Go ahead and hike to the top of the ridge so you can have a better opportunity. You know, so making choices like that, I think, is very important for a new hunter.
Well, there we go. Thank you so much for hopping on the podcast, man. Had a good time chatting with you, for sure.
Thanks for having me, Sam. I appreciate it, man.
Absolutely.
All right, y'all, that'll do it for episode 75 of Living Country in the City. Make sure y'all check out the show notes page at livingcountryinthecity.com/75. But in the meantime, keep it country, y'all.
Thank y'all for listening to Living Country in the City. Get show notes and check out the blog, product reviews, events, and more at livingcountryinthecity.com.